श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की
जय।
श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय। श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय। निरंतरा श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय। गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। Pranam to all. Welcome. Again, thanks so much for your for your ears, which are pretty valuable. As one Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say to his followers, the only thing I'm asking for you is your ears. Don't give me anything else but your ears. But he knew, and that's the entry point, and everything else follows. So we are cocked from our ears, if you will, and the heart follows, basically. You know? So the fact that you are willing to lend your ears for a few hours, that speaks about how willing you are to open your heart and let it be affected by Harikatha, basically. You know? And of course, that implies our whole system, our whole existence will be transformed by that experience. So it's not just sitting and hearing some words, but it's the willingness to be transformed, basically. So if all of you have that willingness, for sure, that will create some effect on me, and that will be my good fortune. So due to your willingness to be transformed, I pray that something of those, I may be sprinkled with some of that willingness from your side. So today we are continuing with our series of lectures on Sri Brahma Stuti that began some months ago, but here in Alacha we began them yesterday. I mean, we continue with them yesterday. We studied verse 14, and today we will continue with verse number 15 of the prayers of Brahma after his divine bewilderment, if you want to put it like that, after Krishna is exhibiting this extreme degree of majesty in the Braj. And Brahma is realizing not only the mistake he made, but actually who Krishna is and who he is in relation to Krishna. He already met Krishna at the beginning of creation, and he got to know Krishna on some level, but now he's realizing further, if you will, layers of his istadev. This is something similar to what happened to Uddhava. When Uddhava was the friend and minister and personal secretary and devotee of Krishna's and whatnot, but when he went to Vrindavan, arguably to send a message to the Brajavasis and eventually realizing, here there is a message for me, actually. while witnessing and while discovering the love of the Brajavasis for Krishna, he himself discovered a new Krishna in that love. He knew Krishna, but he knew Krishna without Brajabhav, without the love of the... my point is, he is still outside of Vrindavan. In the expansion that goes out of Vrindavan, Krishna is affected by the love of the Brajavasis, and the ones who are in Dwarka or Mathura can hint us why he's like gone at this moment, why he's calling some other lady other than me, his wife, during night, and this type of things that happen in Dwarka. But my point is that when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, he was able to make full sense of those strange moments of Krishna outside of Vrindavan. Now he understood, now I understand why he's like this in this moment, in that moment. Now I can fully understand. And now I'm getting to discover a new Krishna here. My experience of Krishna is being maximized in connection to the Vrajavasi. So Uddhava will return then from Vrindavan to Krishna with a refreshed, upgraded experience of who Krishna is, and at the same time of who he is in relation to that new Krishna. So something similar is happening to Brahma here. He met Krishna at the beginning of creation, he expressed something, there was some interaction, but eventually after a few years, quote unquote few, now Brahma is realizing other layer of who Krishna is. And eventually, simultaneously, he's realizing another layer of who he can be in relation to who Krishna is. In other words, he's having a further glimpse of his prospect as and potential as a Krishna Bhakta. And he's expressing his wonder and his newly discovered treasure in all these prayers, one after another, as we were speaking yesterday. One after another, all these 40 prayers, Brahma is experiencing a higher and higher and higher degree of epiphany and realization and chamatkar, astonishment, and who he Krishna is and who I am in relation to him. And the next verse, there is something more. And the next verse, there is something more. And in this way, we are expected to get closer and closer to Krishna ourselves. Through each prayer, through each round, through each bead of the Japa Mala. I mean, not to go neurotic, but ideally, we should be in a progressive mentality, in a progressive mood. May my japa today may be better than yesterday. Maybe this round today may be better than the previous round. Maybe bead today, maybe today at this moment, may be better than the previous bead. Again, not in a calculative, neurotic way, such searching for perfection from an egoic side, but from a healthy concern about getting closer to the object of my affection. And of course, the bhakti mark, the bhakti process has the potential to allow that to happen. We have to allow ourselves for that to happen in us. So that's the work in progress of us as sadhakas. Anyhow, so I will make a brief review of what we saw yesterday for those who were not here, and especially for those who were here. I won't be asking you some questions or anything, don't be scared, but just so all of us can have a brief recap, because yesterday's verse in special was a very important one, verse number 14, in which basically the main theme of the verse, if you want to put it like that, was God is an aspect of Krishna. Try to hear again, because maybe we are accustomed to hear Krishna is an aspect of God. No, God is an aspect of Krishna. That's one of the conceptual jewels that the Bhagavatam is giving us. If you are able to dive deep into the ocean of the Bhagavat, you can discover this type of jewels by proper sangha. That we were speaking the other day with some devotees. No, you can remain, you can jump into the ocean of bhakti, but you can just remain in floating on the surface and tasting salty water. It's something. It's already the ocean of bhakti. But beyond or beneath, how to say, beneath the salty surface, there is a sweet depth, composed of very valuable jewels of realizations and conclusions. But you need to know how to swim to those depths. You have to be an expert swimmer. You have to have an oxygen tube. Now, so somehow proper sangha is that oxygen tube that is giving us air, oxygen, prana, life, pranada. That's one of the meanings. Pranada means giver of prana, basically. So we could understand that as, without the sadhus, I will drown in this ocean. I don't have capacity to go too much to the depth, because I need to, and I go back to the salty surface. And, I'm alive, but everything is relatively salty. So the sweet jewels in the depths of the ocean will be only accessed by the oxygen tube of sadhu sangha and the commentaries of our purvacharyas who accompany us and give us the required prana so we can grasp those. So in this, one of these ones is God is an aspect of Krishna. Krishna is tu bhagavan swayam. Basically, that's the implication of that. So in yesterday's verse, Brahma is re-establishing this principle, Krishna is tu bhagavan swayam. So I'll read the verse, the English translation only in this case, some few words, and then we go to today's verse. So Brahma said, "Are you not the original Narayana, O Supreme Controller, since you are the soul of every embodied being and the eternal witness of all created realms? Indeed, Narayana is a portion of yours, and he is called Narayana because he is the generating source of the primeval water of the universe. He is real, not a product of your illusory Maya." So, this verse. And Brahma here is presenting a rhetorical question. Are you not this? Of course you are. That's the implication. In other words, there's, of course, we explain different levels of meaning of this verse. One level, Brahma is saying, of course you are Narayan. No, there is no difference between you and Narayan. Narayan is not you. You are Narayan. Narayan is included in you, in one sense. But you are not included in the Narayan version, if you want to put it like that. But also the word he, certainly, also according to some acharyas, means, okay, you are Narayan, but in one sense, you are not Narayan. In the sense of you are beyond Narayan. Narayan is an aspect of you. Narayana Anga. Anga means a portion. So Narayan, God is a portion of Krishna, with all respect to God. it's a portion of Krishna, so it's not disconnected. It's an Anga of the Angi, of the whole body, it's a limb of that. So Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam gives this idea, like the original candle that is lighting other candles. And you see all the candles seem the same, but there was one original candle. One original candle, and all the others are lit, if you will, by the original one. So Brahma here is implying, as a conclusion, just making a long lecture we had yesterday, short, in our summary, the intention of all this, of course, is in the context of establishing this very crucial point of Gaudiya Siddhanta, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Brahma is also implying, I am born from the lotus coming from the navel of Garbhodakshai Vishnu, who is Anamsa of Mahavishnu, who is Anamsa of Narayan, who is Anamsa of you. So my father is a portion of a portion of a portion of you. So somehow you are my ultimate father, Brahma is saying here. And therefore, if you are my ultimate father, you need to forgive me for my offense. Daddy. Basically, that's the practical implication of the verse. Now, you are God, you are beyond God, but at the same time you are connected with God, and I'm the son of one of the portion of your portions, and due to the mischievous thing I did, you have to forgive me. I'm just like a baby. No? Do not take it seriously, please. Forgive me. And Brahma is crying, remember, at the feet of Krishna. He's not just relaxed, speaking from an ego platform. Hey, forgive me, daddy, or something. But he's really meaning that. So today we will continue with the next verse, verse number 15, which somehow begins, according to Jiva Goswami and other acharyas, begins kind of a section of verses from this verse 15 till verse 22. So there will be 8 verses focusing or further elaborating this verse, 14 verse. This idea of God is an aspect of Krishna, Krishna's ultimacy, Krishna's position, all this will be elaborated from verse 15 till verse 22. So today we'll see verse 15, and those who like to know about the other verses, well, we can go to Bulgaria next week, so there's time yet, just in case. There we will continue. So before going to the verse, let's again, as usual, connect the dots and verses with other verses, since there is some conceptual thread between all these different prayers of Brahma. So Brahma in the previous verse mentioned, okay, Krishna, although he appears, tired Pranada today. No problem. You're about to get the Guinness records of sinning in class. That's interesting. Call the Guinness records and somehow. It's okay, no problem. There's some story regarding Shastra regarding falling asleep in Bhagavatam class. This is not falling asleep. This is another type of curse from the Brahmins in the ancient times, but no problem. I know she's there. She's struggling more than any of us to keep focus on the Bhagavad. So that's pretty valuable. Sorry if I misread that one. Yeah, we shouldn't leave that out. Yeah, that possibility is always there. With the sattvic above, we can justify anything. Sleeping, sneezing, just whatever, crying. And so, in the previous verse, again, the one we just summarized, Brahma is implying, okay, Krishna, although you are appearing like a small boy, because that's how Krishna is appearing in front of Brahma here. He still has not reached even Kishore age. So he's just like a boy first picnic with his friends. I mean, you won't be very, very old for having your first picnic with your friends. I mean, at which time your mother will allow you that to happen? You may be what?
Come on. 10, 6, 7.
Okay, different. 7. Some more conservative families than others. Okay. Whatever the case, you are still pretty small. So, but the point is, Brahma is making the point, although you appear in that way, at the same time, your form that seems pretty much like a boy, young boy, is all-pervading, even including Narayan. Which again, is a mind-boggling point. I mean, this little boy includes... Narayan is a little portion of this little boy. Big Narayan. So in today's verse, interestingly, Brahma will further establish this point by recalling his experience in the beginning of creation with Krishna. Remember that Brahma first met Krishna at the beginning of the creation cycle. He got darshan of Krishna, who appeared in a more formal way as his guru. They shake hands. Brahma expressed some desire for Sakya, according to some of our acharyas. So what happened in the beginning of creation, as I mentioned, Brahma was born from a lotus flower. And that lotus flower sprouted from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So Brahma was not able to see anything. I mean, try to imagine the situation. It's pretty bizarre. No? Like you appearing from a lotus flower to begin with. That sounds pretty psychedelic. And there's nothing else apart you and the lotus flower. There's nothing else. Nobody else, nothing, sound, sight, anything. Try to travel to that. It's impossible even to imagine that. And Brahma has some... His guts are telling him, I need to look for my source. No? Which is my source? So the only thing he has is a lotus flower and... How do you say? Stem?
Stem.
So the only way out is the stem, if you will. Of course, eventually the way out will be the way in. But to begin with, he goes... He pays attention to the place he was born. And he enters the lotus stem and starts to in search of his source. No, like, of course, all this has a big degree of symbology, if you will, also like Brahma representing, in one sense, all of us looking for our source and so on, and not being able to find the root by your own search. Okay, I will look, I will find. And you go to the stem is never ending. You never get to the root. Never get to the root. So Brahma, unsuccessful, realizes, okay, this is not working in this direction. No, trying to make my way out by myself. So he returns to the lotus flowers, you know. He tries to make his way out, his way in, if you will. No? And he eventually receives a divine command when he is instructed to perform engaging tapasya. And Brahma obediently follows the order. He's a good boy, a good son, because the boy is coming ultimately from his father. So eventually Krishna is pleased by that obedience of Brahma engaged in tapasya, and he gives darshan to Brahma. Brahma sees Bhagavan. And Brahma offers prayers to him, the Bhagavatam, this is present. We also have Brahma Samhita and so on. And Krishna blesses Brahma, and eventually he disappears. Brahma didn't want Krishna to disappear, but Krishna disappeared. And Brahma was not thinking about Krishna will appear. He just followed the boys. But Krishna appeared. So the point is start to be made. Krishna appeared out of his own will, and Krishna disappeared, despite Brahma wanted him to stay. So out of his own will, he disappeared as well. So now, here in this verse, Brahma is recollecting that experience. And in the context of what happened there, he will try to make this point, praying to Krishna as the Supreme Person and supremely independent, and many other points that we will try to unfold today. So let's go to the verse in itself. Sorry if I don't have any whiteboard for you to go through the Sanskrit. If you have there, Pranada did her homework. If you have your cell phone or wherever you want to find, it's verse 15, chapter 14 of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll read first the Sanskrit. This is in Indra Bhamsa and Indra Bhajra Chanda, 2 meters combined in different lines, as many of these verses. So it says like this. Tati jalashtam tava sajjagadva pu kimme nadrishtam bhagavam sadaiva kim vasu drishtam hridi me tadaiva kim no sada sapadeva punarbyadarshi. So let's go to the English translation. Brahma is saying, my dear Lord, if your transcendental body, which shelters the entire universe, is actually lying upon the water, then why were you not seen by me when I searched for you? And why, though I could not envision you properly within my heart, did you then suddenly reveal yourself? And why could I not see you again immediately thereafter? So maybe we follow the same point that we were introducing now. He's making first the point, your body is transcendental. Or he basically speaks in rhetorical way. If your body is not transcendental, like some people may say, he's not saying that, then how the whole universe is sheltered there? And where I was looking for you, I was not able to find you, and so on. So he will try to make this point about Krishna's form being, he will refer to Narayan's form or Vishnu's form as transcendental without touching Krishna's form. But he already made the point, all the Vishnus and Narayan are a part of you. So you have to understand and follow the context. So if I say, I don't know, this person is an expansion of this person, B is an expansion of A, and then I say B is transcendental and so on, I mean, if that's going on with B, it applies much more with A. So here Brahma is saying that, making that point. First he says, Narayan is your portion, and now he starts to speak, Narayan's body is transcendental, and because that was his most immediate experience with Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and so on. What to speak of? That's what we call sometimes kaimutya nyaya. Kaimutya nyaya means you say something and then like this, what to speak of this? No, I don't know. For example, in Bhagavatam Ajamil, he's delivered by the Vishnu Dutas by chanting Namavas only. Of course, the conclusion of that section of the Bhagavatam is not, okay, I will name my son Narayan and I can relax the whole of my life and I have him close to me. So in my deathbed, and when the Vishyamadutas will start to devour me, I just call Narayan, Narayan. And I got free. That's not the point of the Bhagavatam. The point is, if that can happen by chanting Namavas, if you can get mukti by Namavas, what to speak of chanting Sudanam with proper, using your full will and agency in that direction? I mean, which will be that result? And so similarly like this. So let me go word by word for a minute, and then we will try to unfold a little bit what's saying here. So the first line says, tat chet jalashtam tavasak jagat bapu. So tat means that, referring to the body. So this verse will speak about how the body of Bhagavan is spiritual, unlimited, transcendental, and so on. So tat means that. That means that body. Chet means if. So again, he's kind of presenting if that body, and so on. Jalashtam means situated on the water. So here he's referring to the form of Vishnu residing in the water, causal water. Tava means your. Then he says Sat Jagat Bapu. So Sat means real. Your body is real. And Jagat Bapu means in your body, Jagat. Now the world exists. From your body, it emanates. Remember, from this body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, this flower comes, Brahma comes, and from that all the rest of the unpacking, universal unpacking comes, Brahma being the architect of that. Not the creator, but the second creator, if you want to put it. Sarga, Visarga, Bhagavatam speaks. Sarga means Krishna providing the elements, Visarga means Brahma's making sense of the elements, doing something with them. Different forms and species and so on. Second line says, Kim me nadrishtam bhagavam stadaiva. So Kim means why, me means by me. Nadrishtam means was not seen. So now he starts to relate his own experience. When he was not able to see Bhagavan, when he was looking for him by going down the what?
Stand.
Sarah, thank you.
Do you go down the inside or the outside?
Which version you like the most?
Well, if you couldn't see, it seems like he'd be inside.
Yeah.
That's why he couldn't see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did he go inside? Because he couldn't get to the outside of the petals or something? I don't know.
You have to be born as Brahma and find it for ourselves. Yeah, I would say that whether he went inside or outside, he was not able to find his source. No? I mean, whether if he will do one thing or the other, it was beyond his reach. No? It's not that actually it's because he was inside the stem that he couldn't see, but actually Vishnu was outside. And no? So the idea is he really looked, he really searched. I mean, he really searched. And that's an important point, and of course, that we have to take in clear. Ambayabhyatirekabhya, says the Bhagavatam also. And Krishna said that to Brahma in the Chatur-shloki. We have to look for this truth both directly and indirectly, like implying in every single possible way. If you are a sincere seeker, you will be searching and searching and searching. Of course, understanding it not only depends on my search, but I have to do my part. Like the Bhagavatam describes the proper spirit of a disciple. Tashmat gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. The disciple is jignyasu shreya uttamam. He is atatu brahma jignyasa. Jignyasu. He's an inquirer. You say inquirer? I mean, that's nothing strange that the main character, one of the two main characters, if you want to put it like that, of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Parikshit Maharaj. And the very name Pariksit means the examiner. Pari-ikshi. Iksha means to look, and pari means in every direction. So Pariksit means he was looking in every direction for that person that he saw in the womb of his mother. Remember, he had darshan of Krishna in the womb. He was protected by Krishna from the Brahmastra sent by Ashwata. And after seeing Krishna, the only question he had is, where is that person again? So he just went out of the woman. He will inquire and examine each person. Are you that person? No. I'm looking here and there, desperately looking for that. So that's a way. And Pariksit is the model of the disciple that the Bhagavatam is presenting, basically. No? Shukadev is the guru, Pariksit is the disciple. So that's saying something. You follow my point? That's one of the many things the Bhagavatam is trying to make to us. Okay, you want to be a disciple? Here you have a disciple. He went from both guru and disciple, as we know. Sukadev Goswami went out of the womb and he just ran into the forest. So Pariksit Maharaj went out from the womb and he started to inquire, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? So this is the standard that the Bhagavatam wants to do. Right from the womb, ideally, if possible, start your inquiry, jignyasa. Atato Brahma Jignyasa means right now inquire about the Absolute. Right now, not tomorrow, not later, not yesterday. Now. Now you understand the necessity of that. So yeah, Brahma was seriously inquiring. That's the point. But of course, at the same time, part of his seriousness unfolded in the form of his realizing, no matter how serious I am, it does not depend all about, it's not all about me. All about my own seriousness. There's some point where if the Absolute doesn't want to reveal to me, I cannot force that to happen. So that shows the result of his seriousness in the inquiry took him to that realization. Anyhow, I'm going through the word by word here. So, Nadrishtam Bhagavans Tadaiba. So, Bhagavan means Bhagavan, referring to Krishna, and Tadaiba means Tadaiva, right at that time. So why did I not see you right at that time when I was looking for you? The third line says, Kim ba sudrishtam hridime tadaiva. Then says, Kim again. So why? Sudrishtam, not nadrishtam. Before he say nadrishtam, why in the beginning I did not see you? And then Kim sudrishtam. And then after that, I was able to see you. I had your darshan. So how... why did not have your darshan? Why did I have your darshan? What's the reason between these two, darshan and no darshan? The reason is the same, basically. Krishna is choosing to reveal or to hide himself, if you will. Hmm? Hridi means heart. So Rama had antardarshan, which means he saw Krishna in his heart. Now, there are two types of darshan, seeing Krishna inside the heart, seeing Krishna in front of one's own eyes, if you will, by his divine mercy. And this is a very point that my Guru Maharaj always likes to make, connecting with the Mahabharata, when Duryodhana wanted to capture Krishna at one point, and he wanted to tie Krishna. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of Yashoda with a pretty much different bhav, I can tell you. But maybe he heard from someone, no? Oh, when he was a child, he was tied. So Duryodhana, in his own psychology, he thought, okay, I may try it. It worked for Yashoda. But he forgot that there's a little difference between Yashoda and Duryodhana, basically. They have different robes. The robes are qualitatively different. No? Yashoda's robe is the robe of affection, the robe of prem. Mm? And the robes that Duryodhana had were the gunas. Guna means robe. So sattva, rajas, tamas, that's the only robe he had access to. So he tried to go with the gunas to tie Krishna. He tried to imagine how ridiculous project. No? If I go with sattva, rajas, tamas, I will capture Krishna. When Krishna is the one who is saying, I'm totally beyond the gunas. Actually, if you want to transcend the gunas, you have to come to me. What to speak, trying to trap me with the gunas. But Duryodhana tried and tried his best, and Krishna showed universal form. No beginning, no end. Like saying to Duryodhana, okay, tie me. Try it. And Duryodhana was, where to begin? I mean, I don't know how, what to do with this. No. And at this moment, when this Vishwarup was being shown, there were other people present, and they were wondering about what was taking place. And Dhritarashtra was also present there. And as you know, Dhritarashtra was blind, materially speaking. And he could hear, oh, something wondrous is going on, but I cannot see. So he started to pray to Krishna at that moment. And he prayed, please, Krishna, give me eyes so I can see this form of yours. So following our point here, what did Krishna say? No. I mean, yes and no. But he said, actually, you don't need eyes to see me. Krishna said, if I tell you, see me, you can see me. It's not that I need first to cure your blindness. Because you have material blindness. If I want you to see me, you will see me beyond your blindness and whatever obstacle is there. So this point was made by Krishna. I mean, you can see me if I want you to see me. If I don't want you to see me. If I want you to see me, even if you are blind, you can see me. If I don't want you to see me, even if you have four eyes or whatever, egg eyes like Brahma, at one point you won't be able to see me. And Brahma was looking north, south, west, east, just in case Krishna is there, Krishna is this direction. Krishna is not there. He wanted to see him, remember the degree of his search, inquiry. So, kimba sudrishtam kridime tadaiba. So why then, again, I was not able to see you, and then I had darshan of you in my heart, tadaiba, at that time. And the last line, kim no sapadi eva punar vidyarshi. So why not? Sapadi eva means suddenly. Puna means again. Vidyarshi was seen. But he said na before. So not seen. So why first I saw you? First I couldn't see you. Then I saw you. And then I stopped seeing you again. So how this has taken place? Because again, in the beginning, I was, in one sense, not trying to see you. I was looking for something, but I didn't know what. So I was not trying to see you, but I saw you. And then I want to see you, and I stopped seeing you. So let's try to unpack a little bit the implications of this verse. I'll begin, as usual, with my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse, which will be included in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandal, and he very graciously shared with me. So his commentary is called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad. So he's paraphrasing Brahma here. So Brahma is saying, if you were limited by time and space, I could have seen you when I looked for my source at the dawn of creation. But I could not see you. Instead, I saw you within my heart in meditation only after I followed your oracle, advising me to engage in tapa, culminating in bhakti. It was as if you were playing hide and seek with me even then. Remember, Brahma was Sakyarasa. One prominent aspect, moment of Sakyarasa is, let's play hide and seek. So Brahma wanted Sakyabhav. I mean, he didn't want to express that yet. But Krishna could foretell, okay, let's start with some hide and seek. Let's prepare the ground. And also he mentioned some things in connection to the previous verse we saw yesterday. My Guru Maharaj connects them. Again, Brahma says, you are that Narayana. More clearly, Narayana himself is a limb, anga of your body. Narayana anga. This is what I saw in your extraordinary display of majesty at the culmination of your cowherd and lila with your friends. After I tried to hide your friends and calves from you, foolishly thinking I could subject you to a game of hide and seek of my own design. No? So you only play hide and seek of your own design. No? So Krishna was playing hide and seek with Brahma, but then Brahma somehow tried to do the same. It didn't work. No, you are not to enter there trying to impose your own rules of the game. No? Krishna has his own hide and seek, and you have to follow the rules of that particular game. Every game has rules. That's a very important point. We want to enter lila. Lila means play, game. And every game has rules. If there are no rules, there's no game. If we are playing, I don't know, if there is one chess. How do you say chess? Board. I don't know how to play chess. No? But let's suppose I know. So I sit with Sumati. You know how to play chess?
No.
Let's suppose she knows. And we start, and I start to move the pieces as I like, without following any rules. Subhati will tell me, what are you doing, Maharaj? I mean, we are supposed to play chess. And I say, yeah, we are playing chess according to my own sweet will. I say, but that's not how it plays. Chess is playing. There are certain rules. If there are no rules, there's no game. If there are no rules, there's no play. If anyone can do whatever they like, what's it play? So follow. Similarly in lila, lila means play. But there are rules for the play to happen. So again, Brahma is getting familiarized with the rules of the game. He wants to enter there, but still he tried to present his own rules, but it's not happening. You are Narayan, and you are at the same time not Narayan, as we already mentioned. In that Narayan, properly understood, is only your avatar and your lilas of hide and seek with your friends are sweeter than Narayan's lilas. So I would say yesterday, there are four unique attributes present in Braja Krishna that are not to be found even in Narayan. And one of them is lila madhuri. Now Krishna has very sweet pastimes, very sweet hide and seek, in this case, that are not found in Narayan. I mean, Narayan is not playing hide and seek, I can tell you. That would be disconcerting for the Vaikuntha Bhaktas. Like, where is Narayan? He's playing hide and seek. What? God cannot do those stuff, that stuff. No, God has to be God. That's why Krishna is something else. No, Krishna is God playing hide and seek. No. If God cannot play hide and seek, then we need something else, something beyond God. And that's Krishna. There hide and seek finds its place, basically. So those are the few words of my Guru Maharaj while commenting on this particular verse. So now let's go to the ancient commentators of the Bhagavatam, beginning with Sridhar Swami and going through Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Sridhar Swami Pad begins, we will begin with him. And in his Bhavartha Deepika, he basically is paraphrasing the verse. Many times our chairs will do that in the commentary. Sometimes they will basically repeat the verse in their commentary, which is not redundant. I mean, it's important to remake the point with some slight adjustments. So Sridhar Swami repeats the verse in his commentary, and then he mentions that the gist of the verse is the delimitation of your murti in a particular location is not real. That's the words that he uses for what Brahma is meaning in this verse. Now, your murti means your form. If you try to delimitate that form to a particular location, that's not happening. That's not possible. If you want to say, you are limited to whatever, the causal ocean where you are lying, and Brahma is trying to find here, okay, there is a navel, so the navel must come from some water, lotus flower, come from water, so I will go to the water, and there I will find Krishna, Vishnu, my source. But it's not happening like that. So even it seems to be delimited to lying in a water and so on, when Brahma tries to find him, he cannot find him. So it's showing it's not limited. It seems limited, but it's not. And of course, again, try to always play out this idea. Brahma is saying this in connection to Vishnu in the water, but all these same points apply all much more to Krishna appearing in his Nara Lila as an aprakrit form, which seems like an ordinary, mundane, small cowherd boy, which seems way more limited than Vishnu lying on the causal ocean. That seems pretty extraordinary. Although one may think that's even limited, it's not. But Krishna seems like ultra-limited. Ultra-ordinary, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say. Vrindavan seems very small in size, but it's very big in affection. And he will say, if you go from Vrindavan to Vaikuntha, it seems bigger. People have another pair of arms to begin with. And it's overtly transcendental. You realize, okay, God is here. This is big. But there's not that much affection. Just Santa Dasya, period. The rasa, sequence has not unfolded that much more. And if you go to Brahman from Vaikuntha, Brahman seems even bigger. Because in Brahman there's no form. There's no space. Everything is like all-pervading and limited. You could say, wow, this is bigger. But there is nobody there. There's no sense of individuality. So there's no affection, basically. You will never read in Shastra, Brahman is affectionate. Brahman is sweet. No. Brahman is lovingly interacting with his devotee. No. So it's bigger, if you want to put it, seems bigger in size, but there's no affection, basically. If you go to Vaikuntha, it seems smaller than Brahman, but it's bigger in affection. And if you go to Vrindavan, it seems even smaller than Vaikuntha, but it's bigger in affection. And Guru Maharaj likes to connect that with Sriman Mahaprabhu residing in the Gambira. Gambira is, for those of you who have been there, it's what? This size, 2 per 2 meters or something. Mahaprabhu resided there for 12 years without interruption. So you may say, wow, that's a small place. But my Guru Maharaj will say, a big ideal in mind. Mahaprabhu has such a big ideal that no matter he was in a small place, he has so much inner size, inner depth and breadth, that he never felt, oh, this is a very small room. Because if you are with the person you love, my Guru Maharaj will say, in a cave, that's okay. You're happy because love is there. You don't feel the cave. You feel love. But if you have the whole Sahara desert for you, but there's nobody else there, there is no love, oh, but you have so much size and space. Yeah, I don't care. I want the cave of my lover there. So that's the reality here. No? So try to understand this point. Krishna, Narayan's form is transcendental, unlimited, and Krishna's form is equally transcendental and unlimited, and if you want to put it more complete. Narayan is complete, Krishna is more complete, as we say. But he seems aprakrita. He appears to be aprakrita means, seems prakrita, seems mundane, but is supramundane. Adokshaya means overtly transcendental. Again, four arms. Imagine if I suddenly I'm speaking with you and two more arms come from here. I mean, probably you won't remain seated like you are in the chair there. I don't know what will happen to you. And hopefully two more arms do not appear from me. I wouldn't like to interrupt the lecture in that way. And I'm not interested in having two more arms, to be honest. Still I'm figuring out what to do with these two in Krishna's service. But my point is, that's overtly transcendental. But by Vrindavan, doesn't seem transcendental. But when you look at the close side, you realize, wow, this is beyond Vaikuntha. So anyhow, that's the commentary of Sridhar Swami. That the delimitation of the Murti of Bhagavan to a particular location is not real. Although it seems, again, the point is, Krishna seems to be in a particular location. Krishna is in front of Brahma at that point. Try to understand this point. You are having Krishna in front of you, so you think, okay, he's here. But at the same time, he's not only here. He's everywhere, but he's here. These type of transrational processes are exploding in Brahma's four minds, four heads. Let's go to Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Vaishnava Toshan. He says like this. Brahma elaborates on the true existence of the Lord. He said, if you were situated on the water, why did I not see you by external vision? Again, in other words, you cannot be seen by external vision. Although you may be there, you need special eyes. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. Sadaiva. You appear in my heart at that time only after long practice. So that's an interesting point, implying probably you were there, but I didn't have the eyes to see you because I did not engage in the proper sadhana to develop the proper eyes to see you who were right in front of me. That's the point. I mean, the idea is Krishna is there, but unless you go through sadhana, you won't attract the specific mercy and prepare your heart to realize, oh, he's there. So Brahma is saying this, making this point. You appear in my heart at that time only after long practice by following your order. Tapa, tapa. But even then, the effort did not give the full effect. Why? Why did you not appear to my external vision and only in my heart? So here Brahma, Sanatana Goswami is making through Brahma the point, internal darshan is one level, but external darshan is superior. That's made by him in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also in detail. So Brahma is here saying, the full effect was not yet there. Now he's having the full effect. The following point. Brahma is comparing, the beginning of creation I saw you in my heart, but now you are standing in front of me and I'm trying to make sense of this. And this is much sweeter. This unique darshan. But again, important point. Again, there are many important points here. Hope you have 3-4 more hours and eternity for continuing dealing with this. So Brahma heard tapa, tapa. Those are the first words you will hear in this world, basically. You are here in this world looking for your source. Tapa. First go through those two syllables before you want to hear anything else. And tapa basically means enter into the fire. You can say austerity means. But actually, tapas means enter into the fire of introspection. Because practically speaking, what did Brahma say after tapa? He engaged in what in yoga is called pratyahara. So pratyahara means retire all the senses and, as I like to say, close your eyes and see. Close all your senses and turn inward. That's actually tapa. And try to do it. It's not that easy. It's entering to the fire, if you will. It's not complex. Go outside of your comfort zone. And Brahma is the personification of that. I mean, and he didn't do that for for 15 minutes. I said, I'm tired with this. Nothing is going on. I'll check my Instagram for a while. Oh, now something is happening. He was there for thousands and thousands of years before the fruit of his tapas came into his heart. So that's the point. You are in this world, understand this is about tapasya. But sometimes devotees will say that in a way that seems just, okay, you are in this world, you have to engage in tapasya. Yes, but what does it mean? What's the implication of that? I will say you have to turn inwards. Try to become more introspective. It doesn't mean sleep less, eat less, become repressed and be a fanatic and reject everyone or anything like that. It means try to turn inwards and be introspective. That's not so easy. It's easier to criticize everyone and say everything is wrong and whatever. I want to run to the mountain. Okay, but in the mountain you have to close your eyes and see. Nonetheless. So that's the first part of Sanatana Goswami's commentary. You know? Even after Brahma did his homework again. He engaged in tapas for a long time. But he's able now, he's having this insight now. But even that sadhana, intense engagement, gave me a partial fruit. Not the full effect. I have antardarshan. And now he's realizing, now the real fruit is coming. Now I'm seeing you in front of me. And we see, you know, how much time did it take to Brahma? It was not a weekend retreat, and he already had seen Krishna outside of him. It took thousands of years. So please, sometimes when you hear your Gurudev or someone telling you, maximum, if you are a good devotee, it may take you 2-3 lifetimes to reach success. Do not complain. Please do not feel like that's too much. Just think about Brahma and become embarrassed about how little price we are paying because of the special mercy of Sri Gaurasundara and his Sankirtan Leela. So Brahma then says, and also, although you appear then, remember, I mean, Krishna appeared in the beginning of creation, after tapas, and then disappeared. So Brahma said, and you did not appear again at that time. After appearing in my heart, you disappear from my heart. And try to imagine the situation. You disappear from my heart. So Krishna appeared, gave benediction to Brahma. He was in need of certain blessings to know what to do with his life, basically. Some form of existential crisis. Who I am, what I'm supposed to do. I need some clarity and empowerment. So Brahma did that, then disappeared. And Brahma again started to engage in tapas in the pain of separation from Krishna at the beginning of creation. But he could not see him again. That's a point, interesting point. Brahma engaged in tapasya to see Krishna. I mean, not to see Krishna, engaged in tapasya because he heard, do that. He saw Krishna. Krishna disappeared from his heart. Then he engaged in tapasya again, thinking, okay, by tapasya I saw Krishna, then by tapasya again I will see Krishna again. No. You will see Krishna when he wants to be seen. Do you follow my point? You may be chanting your rounds and you see Krishna. And then Krishna disappears. You say, okay, I will chant again, so I see him again. It's like he's not appearing. Yeah, exactly. So he's making the rules, basically. Of course, keep chanting. but the point is, you won't see me again at this time. It's not that Brahma did not see Krishna again. Next time he's seeing Krishna, in the best possible darshan outside of his heart in front of him. So it's not that Krishna disappeared to torture Brahma never to appear again. He disappeared, so Brahma could develop the proper longing to prepare his heart for the next darshan, an upgraded darshan that will come now in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. So now Brahma is, after proper tapas, is able to appreciate, oh, what I'm seeing now is way superior. What you saw. And now everything makes sense. Now Brahma is making full circle regarding all that happened in the beginning of creation. And it took some few thousands of years to make the full circle. Now I understand why you did not appear again to me. Just to prepare me to see you in this unique form. That actually is what I asked you in the beginning. But in one way I asked you your Sakya, but at one point I didn't know too much what I was asking about, in one sense. I asked on some level, but now that I see you, and it makes full circle, now I understand what does it mean to have Sakya, basically. So Krishna is the one who chooses to appear and disappear. A famous example is with Narad Muni, as you know. Narad Muni was also meditating. Krishna appeared and eventually disappeared. Narad started to reappear. Please reappear. But the voice came, not in this lifetime, Narada. I mean, it was just one lifetime. Of course, we could say for Brahma it was the same, but Brahma's lifetime is pretty long. But again, for Narada, this was okay. After hearing that, he's been thrown into a pool of longing. Okay, not in this lifetime. So the remaining of your lifetime will be consumed in the fire of longing. So to reobtain that sight, basically. And that was happened. That's how Krishna is. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in Madhurya Kadambini. He's describing advanced stages of bhakti, like Bhava Bhakti. No, Bhava Bhakta will have a darshan of Krishna, and Krishna will manifest to him through his different senses, through all his different features. No, the Bhava Bhakta will contact Krishna's aroma with his nose, Krishna's sound, flute sound with his ears, and so on. And all the senses of the Bhavuka will collapse, and Krishna will disappear. And then that Bhava Bhakta will be basically like a madman. That's how Vishnu Chakravarti describes him or her. He will be just crazy, wanting to just see that again. And that will create the necessary fire to, of course, Bhava Bhakti is Bhava Bhakti, but you could say even in previous stages, that fire will burn whatever remaining impurities will be there and just promote, impel that devotee at full speed towards the ultimate goal. So many examples in Shastra to illustrate this same point. Goswamis wanted to join Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu telling them, stay at home, take care of your parents. Sanatana Goswami went to jail. And it's not that they thought, oh, so many obstacles. Let's fall in Maya for a while. We are discouraged, frustrated. Let's do some nonsense. Krishna is not nice with us. No, the total, the opposite. The longing started to increase more. So all these so-called obstacles were actually kindling the fire of their longing. Anyhow, some words by Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad. Let's continue with Srila Jiva Goswami. In his Krama Sandarbha, he basically says that this point that I mentioned in 8 verses, Brahma will explain Krishna's position, beginning with this, till verse 22. And then in Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anucheda 33, he will basically reply how Brahma is explaining Krishna's position in this particular verse. So he says, okay. Sri Brahma relates his own experience to prove that the Lord's body cannot be limited by water or other elements. Remember, he previously referred to him as Narayan, Mahavishnu, Kaushal waters. So Brahma is saying, if it is true that your form of Narayan, the support of the universe, was situated on the water in this way, like delimited by being situated in the water, as we may think of, my Lord, O possessor of inconceivable potencies, then why was I unable to see it when I entered the path of the lotus stem and searched for it for a full 100 years? And again, that's a pretty long time. So full 100 years. And if your Narayan form were a manifestation of Maya or delusion, of course he's not implying that, but just to make the case, that's not happening. But if your form of Narayan, all this about Narayan, which fully applies doubly or triple to Krishna, if that form were a manifestation of Maya or delusion, a mere act of illusory energy, then how is it that after my search, while in pure transcendental consciousness due to perfect trance, I was able to see your beautiful Satchitananda form? Like implying, I saw you in trance, So you cannot be Maya. Your form cannot be illusory. If something is seen through the eyes of Samadhi, that means you are beyond the filter of Maya. So I saw you in Samadhi, that means your form is not Mayic. And in that if that form was material, then why was I not able to see it again instantly after my trance ended? Therefore, my conclusion is that your Narayan form is neither illusory nor limited by space. So again, the kaimutya or the what to speak of is, if this is applicable to you as Narayan, what to speak of this form of the origin of Narayan that I'm beholding here, Krishna. In other words, the implication is, if Bhagavan only exists in the water, is delimited to that particular location, Brahma will have found him eventually. But he wasn't able to. He searched for many years. And so again, the point is, Bhagavan cannot be attained by one's own endeavor. It's only by Bhagavan's mercy that one can attain, see his form. Which doesn't mean we shouldn't endeavor, but we shouldn't think it only depends on that, because Brahma is showing that point right at the beginning of creation. Like, okay, this is what creation about for all of you who are going to come here. This will happen if you try in this way. You try to see Krishna's form, God's form, by your own endeavor. It's not happening. First created being is saying that to all the ones that will come after, if you will. In the Mahabharata, is a similar story. Yudhishthira Maharaj explained that to Bhishma, which is the story of King Uparichar. Do you know that story? Basically, Uparichar was performing a sacrifice for the pleasure of Bhagavan. So Bhagavan appeared in the sacrifice arena to accept the oblations, they say. But only Uparichar could see him. Uparichar was the king doing the oblations. So he could see Bhagavan coming and receiving the oblations, but nobody else. But they could sense that he was there. So Brihaspati was there. Brihaspati was the chief priest. But he couldn't see Bhagavan. So it is said that he became enraged because of not being able to see Bhagavan. And he threw the ladle?
Ladle.
He threw the ladle into the air in frustration. And he shouted like, why can't I see? I can't see him. I mean, he wanted to see him, but he couldn't. And he was trying hard, but someone else could see him. So it is said that all the assembled devotees tried to pacify Brihaspati, saying basically that neither you nor we can see him at our will, because nobody else could see him. The only one was Uparichar. Only those whom he favors can see him. And in this case, that person is Uparichar. So try to accept the rules of the game. Again, remember, there are rules of the game. This is a descending process. It's called Avaroha Panta. You use that in Indian music. When you speak about the scales, you have the ascending scale and the descending scale. So ascending means aroha, ascending. And descending means avaroha. So this applies also to try to reach Bhagavan for your own ascending endeavors. It's not working. To say that whom Ravana wanted to build a stairway to heaven. Well, maybe the song comes from there. Maybe Led Zeppelin studied Ramayana or something. So yeah, that's not happening. It's not working. You cannot build any stairway to heaven. But we need the stairway from heaven. Not stairway to heaven. Our song is Stairway from Heaven, which means descending process. From there, a stairway is being thrown and we have the chance to go there. And again, the implications, Sri Jiva Goswami mentions there that furthermore, he says, this implies that if Bhagavan's body were material, Brahma would have seen it during his search. We already mentioned that, by his own efforts. But he couldn't. So it's spiritual. In other words, if you can see something by your own material endeavors, that has has nothing to do with mercy, let's say. It has more to do with something is attainable by my own personal efforts. It's just in the realm of justice. What you can attain and deserve and all this type of quotes that won't make us the winner at the end of the day. So on the opposite, you have mercy, spiritual experience, an effort to attain grace, as my Guru Maharaj likes to put. We have to make effort, but our effort has to be in order to attain grace. You have, for example, when you're praying or chanting, you have to make an effort, but the effort is to enter into the proper mood to pray for grace. But you have to make an effort to feel the need for grace, even. Because sometimes the standard natural, quote-unquote, situation of the conditioned soul is, I'm not in need of grace. Natural, quote-unquote, standard from Baddha Jiva. So we need to make an effort to understand how much in need we are, to begin with. That's an effort to realize, to beg for grace. So basically in this verse, Brahma is referring, Jiva Goswami concludes saying, in this verse, Brahmaji refers to Krishna's form, saying, Sudrishta. I clearly saw it. Remember, he had darshan at one point in his heart. Meaning that he was not in illusion or in a dream state when he saw Krishna. It's not that I was hallucinating and you appeared. No, he was in samadhi. So samadhi means chitta vritti nirodha. No, all the mental waves are stopped. No, all these different samskars and movements in the chitta are not filtering your reading of reality, but you are seeing reality as it is. And in that state of samadhi, Brahma saw Krishna, which means you can be seen through samadhi. That's why the Bhagavatam is spoken by Vyasa in that language, samadhi bhasha. I mean, we hear about Krishna from the Bhagavatam mostly. We get to know about that from samadhi. I mean, we are not maybe in samadhi, but the samadhi is extending to us, to the non-samadhis, not the ones who are not in samadhi, but samadhi is reaching us in the form of Bhagavatam, in the form of parampara, in the form of this stairway from heaven. So the Bhagavatam is written in samadhi bhasha, which means the language of trance. It's not written in Sanskrit. Apparently it's written in Sanskrit. Substantially it's written in samadhi. So it's not that by knowing Sanskrit you can understand Bhagavatam. Of course, I'm not against learning Sanskrit, but the point is, learning Sanskrit has to facilitate entering to samadhi, because if it becomes an obstacle to that, I mean, so Vyasa knew Sanskrit pretty well. I mean, he composed whole Vedic literature, but that was not enough. Narada say, go to samadhi now. He didn't say learn Sanskrit, because he already knew Sanskrit. He says, sit in samadhi, and then Bhagavatam came. So that's a very important point. So the fact that Brahma saw Krishna in perfect trance further means Krishna is beyond the gunas. Again, his body is not material. Try to understand how the Bhagavatam is trying to make this point. Krishna's form is not ordinary, not material, although it seems so. And we may say, no, it's not. This is spiritual. We may take it for granted in the level of lip service. But you have to play out the implications of what you say on a daily basis and really see how much do I believe what I'm saying? How much realization do I have of my own words? How much insight? How much close to samadhi am I? Okay, we have a few words. Can I transgress a little bit, some few minutes? Okay, thank you. Legal transgression. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Some brief word from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur before concluding. So he's saying, he's paraphrasing Brahma also. So Brahma said through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, if your transcendental body is actually situated up on the water, then why couldn't I see you even after searching for a long time the lotus stem? So this is similar to what they say. But he then says, you may answer that you were there, but that I could not see you. But then how could I suddenly see you through meditation and then lose sight of you again? Though you are lying on the water and seem to be localized and therefore limited, you hold all the universes within you and are therefore unlimited. You exist at all times, in all places, but by the covering of your yogamaya potency, you are sometimes visible and sometimes invisible. So this is kind of a summary of what we have been saying till now. So here the term yogamaya is invoked. No? Krishna uses that in the Gita, yogamayam samamrita, the Bhagavatam, yogamayam upasrita. So internal potency comes into the scene, and sometimes facilitating one experience or the other. Let's conclude with two mentions of the word Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the name through which Brahma addresses Krishna in this particular verse, Bhagavan, which means many things, but generally the possessor of all opulences, and it's a name to address God or a great personality. So Baladev Vidyabhushan says that in this connection, the sense of the bhakti Bhagavan here is, O you whose Aishvarya cannot be comprehended by reasoning. So Brahma is saying this. Now Brahma is four-headed reasoner. Now he thinks pretty well, pretty much. He's the topmost scientist of creation. And he's realizing this is not enough. Now remember, a few minutes ago his forehead's spinning at full speed, after realizing Krishna's two Bhagavan. So yeah. And he saw pretty much, he's speaking about Aishwarya here, because remember, in Brahma Vimohan Lila, he's witnessing the greatest degree of Aishwarya you could possibly imagine. Unlimited Narayans coming like from the pores of the body of one little Krishna. And Brahma is witnessing that, and his foreheads are collapsing, short-circuiting, basically. So your Aishwarya cannot be comprehended by reasoning. The fact that you are in front of me, but that you are everything and everywhere, at all places and times, and at the same time you appear localized in a half-medium form, having a picnic. Brahma is like, wow. So we should get these types of insights in our bhajan. We have to, I mean, all the things that sound incredible, we should realize all of them. Although, of course, our ultimate goal is to not to be aware of the Aishwarya as Brahma is being here, doing, being aware. As sadhakas, in the process of forgetting that part, we have to be very much aware of that to the point of chamatkar, like Brahma is exhibiting here, of full astonishment and having insights of, okay, Krishna is unlimited, but he's localized on all these type of apparently contradictory attributes which are perfectly harmonized in him. And again, we cannot understand this by here, but we will able to understand them by practice and mercy and realization, and we need to go through those stages before entering the Braja Lila. Brahma is showing this for us sadhakas. I mean, he's a sadhaka, he's not a sita here yet. He advanced sadhaka for sure, but he's showing to us also these stages that you will have to go through, generally speaking at least, as a sadhaka, before converging, entering the converging point of Braja Lila. So you have to have this type of insight, even regarding the Aishwarya of Bhagavan. Lastly, Srinivas Suri, another commentator, says something else regarding the word Bhagavan also. He says, the gist of the vocative Bhagavan is, O you whose six qualities are devoid of any upadhi. So the six qualities are the ones who made one Bhagavan, full beauty and power, renunciation, wealth, fame, and? No, I say that. Strength. Wealth. So he's saying, oh, you whose these six attributes are totally devoid of any upadhi. Now, upadhi means, how to call? I mean, sometimes they are described as limiting adjuncts or designations. So although you have these qualities, your qualities are not limited by any type of designation. Although to have a quality seems to, I mean, be this, you have this particular designation, you are not limited by them because they are unlimited. You are unlimited, your qualities are unlimited, your form is unlimited, nam, rupa, guna, lila, everything is unlimited about you. So Krishna is devoid of all upadhis. Nirupadhi, you have heard that expression sometime. Nirupadhi Vaishnav. Nirupadhi means free from all upadhis. Because why? Krishna is upadhi. So if you expect to relate with Nirupadhi Krishna, you have to become yourself Nirupadhi. You cannot contact Nirupadhi Tattva, the reality who is devoid of all false designation, while yourself still being affected by that. And that's why the official definition of bhakti. I mean, Srila Rupa Goswami gives his famous definition of uttam bhakti, nyabilasita sunyam gyan karmadina britam, and so on. Anukulyana krishnanu silanam bhakti rotama. But his definition is based on another verse from Narad Pancharatra, who says, sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam hrishikesa hrishikena sevanam bhakti ruchate. So it begins with this idea, sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. Bhakti means, among other things, this is the task election, like a secondary quality, to be free from all upadhis. And not only free. I remember one lecture by Srila Bhakti Vallabh Tirtha Maharaj speaking of that. He was like screaming and pounding on the table. He'll say, because the verse sarva upadhi, which already seems pretty much, all upadhis, muktam will mean to be free from all upadhis. But the verse be near muktam. So he will make the point, muktam means to be free from all upadhis. Nirmuktam means to be totally free from all upadhis. Vinirmuktam, he will raise his voice and pound it, means totally, absolutely, completely free from all upadhis. Why? Because if something of that remains, you cannot contact he who is totally, absolutely, completely free from all upadhis. That's what Mahaprabhu taught us, and that's what we are supposed to do, for example, when we enter to worship the deity or so on. You have to engage in Bhuta Suddhi, which means a purification of your sense of being and entering into a spiritual identity, basically, in one sense. And at least conceive of yourself as devoid of upadhis. And what's the main mantra that many times is recited in our tradition? Naham vipro na cha narapatir na pibaisho na asudro naham varni na cha grihapatir na vanasto yatirva kintu prodyam nikila paramanandam purnamritabdher Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamala Yor. Okay, you know that part. So, that's one of the main, of the few slokas attributed to Mahaprabhu in Sanskrit, apart from Sikshastakam, this is one of them. And then Mahaprabhu, what he's saying there, I'm not a Brahmin, not a Kshatri, not a Vaishya, not a Sudra, I'm not a Sannyasi, but he was a Sannyasi, on some level. But on another level, Yatirba, I'm not sannyasi, not grihastha vanaprastha brahmachari. In other words, I do not identify with all those upadhis. Those are designations. They do not constitute the real self. Who am I? Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamala Yor Dasa Dasa Nudas. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna, the beloved of the gopis. That's who I am. That's who we are. No? Devoid of upadhis. And imbibed in bhakti samskars. So again, the conclusion here is Bhagavan means he who is devoid, whose qualities are devoid of all upadhis. Brahma is saying that in this verse, your form is transcendental, untouched by matter, with no upadhis whatsoever. And Brahma is longing, I'd like to relate with you in intimacy forever. So I'm realizing at this point, Brahma says, you are near upadhi, free from upadhi, I need to be near upadhi as well. I need to become totally free from that. Chaito darpana marjanam. I need to cling the mirror of the citta. So that's part of our work in progress in this bhakti project. Brahma is kindly personifying all that to us through each one of these prayers. So I'll finish here. And in the next verse, which will be shared from Sofia, Bulgaria in a few days, but online, Brahma will give some further reasons to substantiate his point that Bhagavan's form is all localized, not limited by that location, and actually is all pervading. So again, this series will continue till this section will continue till verse 22. See you in Bulgaria. And I don't know if there are any questions before finishing. Any comments?
On Friday there'll be questions and answers.
Yeah. See you in Bulgaria for Brahma's more Brahma stuti. See you on Friday for Q&A. But are there any questions, comments, something you may like to share? Bhaktaras?
Maharaj, the last point you were making about nirupadhis, it seems like so much of our life as sadhakas, though, are focused on our upadhis, you know, and rules and regulations are centered and really seem to highlight our upadis and relationship with each other. So,
for example, one practical example.
Women on the right, men on the left.
But that's not happening here?
Right. Not here. But there might be other things, I don't know. That was just the first thing that came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't want to... I can see how it can become problematic if you also don't pay attention to those things, but it seems like if that's the goal, if Nirupati is our goal, then why do we focus so much on...
We shouldn't focus so much, no? Like Sarva Vidini Sheda Shureta Yore Vakin Kara, no? Like it's said in Smartavya Satatam Vishnur Vishmartavya Najatu Chit. All we think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. All the rules and regulations are there to facilitate this principle. So we should bear in mind, which is the purpose of all these rules? Like we were saying today, let's play a game. There are rules, but the rules are not to... They are not to constrict the flow of the game, of the play, but to facilitate. Mm-hmm. So that's an important point. Rules are there to facilitate the free flow of the play. Rules are not to constrict. No? But again, if in the beginning you don't know, you never play the game, you don't have a clue what to do, the rules may feel to you a little bit more like, this is not making me free flow in the game. It sounds a little constricted. But no, you're actually learning how to play. But when you learn how to play, those same rules will have a facilitating function. They are the same rules, but you are no longer the same person. Because you have digested the rules. You have learned how to play the game. And then the rules are just... It's like a musician. No? I mean, on some level, I'm a musician, so... And I've studied some music, and I always like lots of the notion of improvisation in music. In Indian music, there's a lot of that, Indian classical music especially. But interestingly speaking, or of course in Western music, you have jazz or things like this. There are lots of improvisation. So you may think, without knowing, oh, they're playing whatever they like. No, and it sounds good. I mean, how can you do that? I mean, it's not possible. Let's just play whatever and everything will fit magically. No. They know so much what they are doing. But at the same time, they are totally flowing in a free way because they have integrated so much the very foundation of rhythm and melody and harmony that has been... I mean, in the first day they cogged the instrument, they were not flowing like that. They have like to... Okay, read and write and try and fail. But at one point, it seems like they're not looking at each other and everyone is playing whatever they like and it's sounding nice. So my point is still, there are rules there of rhythm, of harmony, of melody, but they have been integrated so to such a point that it seems they disappear totally. But they are there. Still, if you take them out, it will be chaos. So similarly, there are rules, and in the beginning... In the beginning, we come from a too wild lifestyle. No? So what to speak of, let's enter Krishna Leela. First you have to learn the rules of being a human, and then you have to learn the rules of... So gradually, these type of rules are introduced, but the more you understand them and put them in practice, understanding what's the ultimate purpose of them, at one point it becomes second nature. You are no longer thinking about... Oh, when you wake up, I hope you are not thinking, oh, today I have to struggle to remain vegetarian. No. I mean, someone may struggle, may have that particular Aquiles heel or something. Achilles heel, okay, it's closer to Spanish. I don't know why I have to alter that to something else. So that becomes second nature, but in some level, at some point for some, it's like a conscious struggle to not do that. Because you know which are the consequences. But at one point, it's like, I mean, it will be more struggling to do that. No? Like my Guru Maharaj will say, for some of us, it's still a struggle to sit and chant. But for other people, it's a struggle to wake up for the chanting and the sitting. Because they are deriving so much taste from chanting. Like Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, sometimes people say, oh, he was not a Raghunuga Bhakta, and he didn't have the adhikar to be absorbed in Lila Shmaran, and he had to open temples and engaged in the world and have those dynamics. But you are losing sight that before doing that, he was doing Satakotinam Yajna and chanted 1 billion names, which implied chanting 192 rounds for 10 years. I mean, you cannot do that if someone even is paying you $1 million. I mean, you will go crazy if you don't have a taste for that. 10 years, I mean, and how much time does it take to chant 3 lakhs? Basically 24 hours for 1 decade. I mean, if you don't have a taste, you cannot do that. So he did that. So that means he had a taste. And for him, it was more difficult to wake up from that. And let's start Gaudiya Math. He had a taste for the name. So yeah, the idea is that the rules should facilitate, should not constrict. So if someone... And I agree that sometimes we misread this and we, in the name of rules, end up promoting further upadis. Like sometimes I've heard devotees saying, I don't know, they are doing kirtan, and then say, okay, so now the male devotees will sing. Reply. Now the female devotees will sing. So that's contradictory to what's going on, because you are supposed to be chanting, which means you are trying to transcend gender and all these designations. But in the name of chanting, you are reminding everyone, you are a woman and you are a man. Now, instead of helping each other, let's go beyond that. You follow me? So of course I do not agree. I mean, I'm not saying they are doing that with bad intention, but that's not fostering the spirit of the rule, if you will. Yeah, we may still be women and men in a certain degree of identification, and there are certain considerations that are taking place for those who are not yet like Sukadev Goswami. Or like we were speaking today when Prabhupada went to preach to a nude camp?
Nudity.
Yeah. I was shocked. I didn't knew that one. And very, very special devotees came from there. But he entered into a nudist camp. He gave Harikatha. And I asked, but and the people in class was, at least they put clothes for the class, no?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God. I mean, how much compassion and love Srila Prabhupada had, of course. You know? But my point, of course, he could do that. He was not seeing woman, man, naked people or not. But for some people, some considerations will be there. I mean, we won't tell you come with clothes to the program because we will think that's a fact. And if you do not do so, maybe some rules will be invoked. No? Because most of us are not on the platform of Uttam Bhagavats. No? So again, there's place for rules, but there's place for knowing when to break them. No? As we say the other day, no? Only those who follow the rules know when to break the rules, to accept higher rule. And as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, love is the ultimate rule, because in love there are no rules, but in one sense love is making its own rules for the game. Again, Leela is game and is loving interaction, and there are rules, but out of love. So yeah, I would say that we should be careful as sadhakas, because all of us are following rules in some way or another. So to ask ourselves, from where I'm following this rule? I mean, which result is my following of the rules creating in my life? I mean, we have to pay attention, not just follow the rules like mechanically and expect something will happen by being a robot. Rupa Goswami say niyama graha. He say that's one of the 6 things that you can do to ruin your bhakti. So he is asking you want to ruin your bhakti? If you want so, hopefully nobody says yes, but if you want so, there you have 6 things to make your bhakti project a total disaster. One of them, niyama graha, which means 2 things. One of them is whimsically reject all rules and regulations, devotional anarchy. Or the other one is follow all rules and regulations without having a clue which is their purpose. Just doing the thing, like a cyborg or something. That's not good at all. That ruins your bhakti. It's not that just that won't help. That will harm your bhakti project. So it's important that we have this type of introspection, like why I'm following this rule. Not like in a rebel way, I don't want to follow anything, but just to ask yourself why. What's the purpose of following this rule? And maybe you had a purpose 10 years ago, and now you have to find a new purpose for following the same rule. It's not that you need to change the rules in some cases. You need to change the level of purpose to follow the rule. And of course, when you change the level of purpose, the rules changes. It's another rule. It's ruling over another domain. But we have to use our introspection, thinking capacity, sincerity to find new life in that. Remember, I mean, you go to Golok Vrindavan, and they are following rules also. When Nanda Maharaj is worshipping, they follow Varnashram, there are certain social considerations. When he worships Narasimha Sila, he's following all this vidhi, but all in a way that is nourishing their love for Krishna. So externally, they are much way better Vaidhi Bhaktas than us. I mean, they are Ragatmikas, they are not Vaidhi Bhaktas. But in the Leela, the Ragatmikas behave as Vaidhi Bhaktas when worshipping Narayan and following Varna Ashram. And they are so paka in doing all that. But if you pay attention, what's the result of that? It's just converging into a higher obsession for their beloved. So we have to become so expert to deal with rules in that way. We cannot imitate that, but we should learn to ruminate the rules that has been given to us. Okay, something else? I think we are almost in time. But okay, Bhakti Rasa has another question.
This one's about Sri Uddhava. After he went to Braj and then came back to Krishna, what was his relationship with Krishna? Like, I know he didn't want to change his relationship, but it must have been having his eyes open to a whole other side of Krishna, a more Krishna. It must have really affected his relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have to study our series on Brahmar Gita.
Oh, okay.
Of course, that's the conclusion of the whole series, because that's what happens after he returns from Vrindavan. But of course, there is not much detailed description about that, but the hint is given in the sense of it is described all that he went through in Vrindavan, all that he witnessed, and he stayed in Vrindavan for 10 months, Raghunath Das Goswami mentions. Now, it was not just a weekend, okay, let's go to Braj and return. He was like 1 year almost, and then Brajamandal Parikram was there, and that could be called the first Brajamandal Parikram. Because all the Brajavasis were taking Uddhava to the different Leela stalis where Krishna performed this Leela and this Leela, and they will tell him, you can try to imagine being guided on Parikram by Yashoda and the Gopis and Nanda Maharaj, and where that Parikram will end. I mean, you won't be going to more than one place per day, because you reach that place and all the Brajavasis will start to get lost and found there, start to recall all the Leelas and cry and faint, and you have to wake the Parikram leader back, and then you will faint, and this type of things were happening every day for a year. So you can imagine which were the samskars that Uddhava received. And that's a very interesting idea. I always thought about that, because Uddhava once at the same time is a Nityasiddha. So he's considered an eternal associate of Bhagavan, who has a particular sthayibhav, which means a fixed emotional disposition towards Krishna. But somehow in this particular Leela, it is shown that it's not changing. It's not that he becomes a gopi, as some devotees may like to make everyone has to be a gopi ultimately. But somehow his own disposition towards Krishna becomes upgraded by contact with the Vrajavasis on earth. No? That's not happening in the Nitya Leela. In the Nitya Leela, it's not the Golok Vrindavan, Golok Mathura, Golok Dwarka, they are visiting each other, and that's going on earth. No? So on earth, that's happening. Uddhava is going to Vrindavan and finding his own dasya for Krishna, which is also mixed with some sakya, now affected by the whole of the Brajabhav, and very especially by the mood of the gopis. No? As we know, Uddhava prayed their famous six famous prayers. We concluded the series with those six, which are called the Uddhava Gita also. Uddhav Gita can be what we find in the 11th canto, which is Krishna's instructions to Uddhav, but also Uddhav Gita is considered these six verses in chapter 47 of the 10th canto, which the most famous one is Asammaho charanarenu jisam mahamsim brindavanikinapi gulmalatoshadinam jadustyajam sajanamarya patam chahita bejur mukunda padavim shruti virbimregim. I mean, we need a whole month to explain that verse. But basically, Uddhava is praying there to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan. Like totally affected by the Bhava. This is his saying before leaving Vrindavan. He's just bidding farewell from the Brajavasis. And before doing that, he's mentioned these six verses, crying in emotional ecstasy, appreciating what he received from the Brajavasis, and making this last prayer at the feet of all of them, saying, may I be born. And he glorifies especially the gopis. May I be born like a blade of grass, because by being born in that way, we will be getting in touch with the dust from the feet of the gopis. Somehow I will receive that contact, and that will be my greatest fortune. Again, it's not that Uddhava wants to be a gopi, but he appreciates that bhava in such a way that feels, this is upgrading my own relationship with Krishna. And of course, he returns to Krishna, and the relationship is not the same. No, I mean, Krishna seeing Uddhava returning totally transformed. And Uddhava is seeing Krishna transform. Not because he transformed, but because he now is knowing another side of Krishna. Like, oh. And of course, we could say, of course, from that moment on, their relationship was not the same as before, for sure. And in one sense, we could say, I mean, of course, that's the very principle of anurag, which is one of the developmental levels of the degree of prem. Sneha mam pranay anurag bhava mahabhav. So anurag basically means many things, but one of them is that at every moment the experience in relation to Krishna is newer and newer and more upgraded than the previous moment. So it's not that this is only happening to Uddhav. That's my point. I mean, of course, to Uddhav happened in a very particular way. He had a particular bhava disposition, and that somehow was like contrasted with another dimension, and that affected his own disposition. But for those who are in the same disposition, let's say any of the Vrajavasis or whoever, every single day and moment, their service disposition is, as we spoke today, is changing. No. Sometimes devotees may say, no, there cannot be change in the spiritual world. If there is change, that means there is a defect, that, like what we see in this world. So in the world, the Atma is changeless, spirit is changeless. Yes, it's changeless in the sense that spirit consciousness is not being affected by the modifications of that matter is, and time, and degradation, and death, and blah, blah, blah. But there's change also. I mean, at every single moment, every devotee loves Krishna more than before. That's a change. Mm-hmm. There are new lilas at every moment. There are new things happening. Not because they are coming out of nothing. We are not promoting creatio ex nihilo, as they say in Christianity. From nothing, something came. But we are speaking about things unfolding from particular potentials. So if you are in the realm of Swarup Shakti, Swarup Shakti will have a particular potential. We as Tathasta Shakti have a particular potential that unfolds according to a particular environment. Swarup Shakti has its own potential, and the potential plays out in the lila. New lilas, new devotees, new. That's happening. There's no problem with that. That doesn't compromise the ontological reality of consciousness and transcendence. So that's a point, not only to Uddhava, but to everyone. It's getting newer and newer and newer. Krishna is becoming, the experience of Krishna is new. It's not that, if not, they will go crazy, because if you study Astakaliya Lila, it seems every single day they're doing the same. At the same time, they wake up, at the same time this happens. And imagine if there is no change internally, I mean, you will go crazy of boredom. No, imagine, you will be sent to a place where every single day will happen the same thing. I mean, of course, it's not exactly the same thing, but, or like when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, No, my eternal, main eternal service as Kamala Manjari is to prepare camphor lamps for eternity. So imagine if I tell you, can you make some camphor lamps? And you will think, yeah, well, how many, Maharaj? We will just start. And after an hour, you will become like curious. Like, is it enough? I already made 108. And you say, no, you can continue. And after 5-6 hours, you are really getting nervous. You know? Like, how many more camphor lamps I'm supposed to do? So what if I tell you for eternity? You may freak out. No? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is totally satisfied, you know, assuming I will be doing that for eternity. Of course, he's doing some other things. It's not that he's only doing that, but that's his main seva. So that the implication is externally it's the same thing. Internally, it's never the same thing, because anurag is there. The aspect of love that makes everything being tasted as newer and newer and newer and newer, because there's no end to that, also to that experience. So here is the opposite. We try so many different things, but it's always the same material platform. There, they're always doing the same, but it's never the same. So Bhakti Rasa has a third question. Another Guinness record here. Yeah, yeah.
So, kind of going off on what Bhakti Rasa was saying, that Uddhava changed, you know, from that period of time, from where it was before to being in Vrindavan. And so, if you kind of juxtaposition us, you know, everyone here, we started with zero. You know, in a sense, right?
Less than that.
Negative.
Less than that.
Minus 108.
And you know, I mean, this philosophy, this theology is like very, very vast, and it's a little like, I mean, what, you know, I can barely grab a little pin out of it. You know, so how do you, it's like I don't want to be disappointed or lack enthusiasm to really find my ultimate, you know, but how do I lead myself? How does anybody lead themselves to where, to a level that is satisfactory and achievable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see you, you know, and you have a certain capacity. There's many devotees, they have so much ability to grasp all of this philosophy, and some of us are just pretty simple. Like I was just on Harinam, you know, Vinod, and they came by and were waving, you know, the truckers, they honk their horns, that's their service, you know. So what, you know, how do we know that we're maybe making some progress? And where is that, how do we direct ourselves?
That may take some time. Well, I don't know if this is possible. Will you be coming on Friday?
Yes.
Can we say... Can we save for Friday that question?
Sure. Yes.
So I can unfold a little bit more,
yes,
because if
yes.
I can reply now, but I won't take
no,
I won't take an hour to reply that. That will be a lot, but I can take an hour to reply that on Friday.
Okay.
If it's possible.
Yes.
I'm sure you will remember the question.
No, I totally remember.
If not, we all will remind you. The
totally, question. No, I totally remember.
I mean, I think it's a question that all of us are trying. I should be doing ourselves every day, but
yeah,
just in case.
That's why I said it's kind of connected to what she said.
Yeah.
Well, it would have a change, you know, and he went from this to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we started from zero and now,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I started chanting Hare Krishna in 1970, and now
mm-hmm.
it's like 50 years later, and I'm thinking, geez,
mm-hmm.
where have I gone?
Yeah. Yeah, Friday we'll try to
okay.
unpack something. Thanks for the question. Yeah. Okay, so I think we are on time. So if there are any further questions, we can continue on Friday, which will be officially a Q&A day. So for those who would like to raise their hands more, I appreciate that. But also, yeah, we can stop here and process what we shared today and hopefully see you on Friday. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ji ki jai, Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Bol.